broadcasting from Melbourne, Victoria. You're listening to the Investor Exchange. Tune in each week and listen to the guys from United Global Capital discuss the topics that matter the most to your finances. Each episode will help you separate the noise from what really matters, giving you timely and actionable information you can use. We'll cover areas related to financial markets, property, politics, personal finance, and the economy. Now, here's your host.
Hello, listeners, and welcome to this week's episode of the Investor Exchange. I'll be your host today, Louis van Copenhagen, joined as always by Brett Dickinson and
G'day
Joel
there.
Hewish.
Hey, Louis.
Good
Brett,
morning, gents.
How are we?
I see we're playing musical chairs.
Yes.
We are a little bit. Our office is bursting at the seams, and we've got so much stuff.
Yeah, it's incredible.
Having to move our chairs around to do this podcast.
Yeah.
Yep, that's exciting times.
And no Steph.
No, she's being called away on secondment for a pretty important filming session.
Oh, so. Okay. Hopefully the listeners don't miss her too much.
No, she always gives a good perspective.
Everyone's going to have to put up with just us.
Just us.
The boys club.
We've done it before.
Yeah.
So, Brett, which one of us is going to wind up Joel?
Oh, that'll just happen in its natural way, all in due course.
We'll have to try and poke that bear. Very good. So, look, there's a fair bit of things happening at the moment.
It's a big week.
Big week.
Very much so.
There's a Victorian state election happening this weekend.
AFL draft.
Well, that was the biggest news last night, wasn't it?
Yeah. Lucky number 13.
You didn't hear, Louis?
Oh, no.
Collingwood just can't keep themselves out of it.
We're building a dynasty, aren't we?
Yeah, we are.
I think we're building a dynasty.
Yeah. Just for your benefit, Louis. So Collingwood didn't have a draft pick below 30, but we still managed to somehow last night get pick 13 our way.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Gotta love that. So welcome Isaac Quayne to the Collingwood.
Yep. And thanks GWS for helping everyone realise how good he actually is.
Yes, indeed. Anyway.
Well, there you go. Okay. So with all those things happening, Bob, P.S. there's a Royal Commission happening as well.
Absolutely.
Into the financial sector and all sorts of things. Brexit's going on and stuff's all over the world is happening. And
U.S., Trump, China, and trade wars.
Trump's denying something else again, denying reality. Good for him. So, so look, gents, with so much going on, what is on your mind, Joel?
Well, I'm actually curious just to sort of delve deep into the Victorian election that's coming up.
Yeah, okay.
And, look, I used to be an avid follower of politics. Back when I was in university, we used to have some fantastic debates in some of the university courses that I was a part of. And that was the heyday for me, a capitalist libertarian with Howard and Costello leading the charge. You know, they were the heydays for me. And and we had some fantastic debates at university back in those days. But I've really sort of been turned off with politics for the past 10 years and the caliber of, you know, what we've had.
Yeah, the personalities aren't there.
The personalities aren't there.
The merry-go-round.
Yeah, the petty
infighting.
The lack of strategic vision from many of our leaders. You know, it's just become something that I've really become disenfranchised with.
I feel like the values have come out of politics.
Yeah.
Because people are now have such a fear of being ostracized on social media and other media channels that people are afraid to put out a real opinion. So the only things that come out of politicians is this PR washed statement or
sanitized
interview.
Opinions.
There's no personality to it, but second, no leadership, no being on the forefront.
It's this short-termism. In fact, I think there's been this trend, I think, no doubt, since technology has evolved and the speed of information that we get and the, you know, the analytics that goes into that information, that good long-term strategic thinking has gone out of the window and has gone out the door, and we're really just focused in on, okay, what can we do to get the poll numbers up this week, next week, you know, and if they're, you know, if leaders don't have the courage of their conviction to be able to just weather a little bit of volatility in their polls and think longer term, you know, we end up getting this, you know, crappy situation that really isn't working for anybody at the moment.
Yeah, it's not.
Mm. Yeah. One of my leadership gurus is Grant Cardone out of the USA.
Right.
One of the things he says is when you're leading, you're going to get haters.
Absolutely.
Yeah. There's going to be people that hate you. And you're going to hear from the haters well before you get support from those that follow you. Mm-hmm. But there's just no appetite for having hate.
Yeah. They're all thin-skinned.
Yeah.
You know?
Got to be able to take the punches and keep moving forward.
Yep. Anyway, I thought, look, given that it is the Victorian election that's coming up tomorrow, and I've already voted. I don't know about you guys. Have you already put your votes
in? I'll be
in?
Doing it on the day.
Already voted.
Yep. Okay. So I thought it'd be interesting just to have a look at the differences between Labor and the Victorian Coalition, which is basically the Liberals and the National Party down here in Victoria. Apologise for all of those who aren't Victorians, but hey, look, we are the centre of Australia.
That's not such a surprise to me.
So, look, let's just have a quick look and go through some of the key differences. Obviously, transport infrastructure has been a key platform for both parties. And that does have important ramifications for investors, particularly if you are in the real estate market, as Brett has spoken about previously.
Yeah.
But Labor's major platform of transport and infrastructure upgrades center around really $60 billion of rail and road projects. Now, they've pledged around about $50 billion on the suburban underground rail loop. Now, but that's not due to be completed until 2050. So that's
a
long-term sort of plan for them. Where they're proposing...
Which we like. We were just talking about there's not enough long-term vision.
That's
so
right. Yeah.
A tick on that one.
Absolutely. Yes. And they're planning, you know, 12 new underground train stations that'll loop around
the outer rim of the suburbs.
Yep. But so far, only $300 million has actually been put aside, and that's just for business case planning. So, now Labor's big promise at the last election was to remove 50 of the most dangerous level crossings over 8 years, and right now they're doing a pretty good job of doing that. You know, they have they're ahead of schedule. They've removed 29 so far this term.
Great.
And the promise is for 75 to be gone by 2025. So, so you know, all being equal, you know, they seem to be delivering on some of these promises. I guess the biggest contentious issue was the east-west link.
Mm-hmm.
Liberal Party have raised that again as a piece of their infrastructure and transport.
Well, something has to happen with that.
Absolutely,
it's just not sustainable that. Coming out of the eastern suburbs and trying to get across to the west, especially on the eastern freeway, the northern side of the city, doesn't work.
The coalition have hit back with a rail plan of their own, mainly a European-style $19 billion regional rail network.
Yeah.
The idea is that this will deliver trains that will travel up to 200 kilometres from Melbourne out to places like Ballarat, Bendigo, Traralgon, and Geelong, wasn't it?
Yep, Geelong.
Geelong?
Yeah.
Interesting to see that both parties are realising that Victoria's population is booming, that we're having issues around congestion and how do we move people quicker in and out and how do we take some of the pressure off the Melbourne infrastructure, both of them doing it slightly differently. Labor appear to still be supportive of, you know, Melbourne being a bigger city. Hence, you know, let's focus on making sure the infrastructure around the city is boosted up.
Yep.
Where Liberals' plans or the Coalition's plan seems to be more around decentralising the state of Victoria and spreading population, encouraging population growth in some of those regional centres.
And both have merit.
Absolutely.
And probably both are required.
You know, that's the thing, isn't it?
I mean, where our office is, you know, here in the middle of Melbourne CBD, I sometimes go out at the end of the day to catch a tram a few stops, and sometimes it takes two or three trams go by because they're so full.
Absolutely.
It's just, the city does get quite congested. And then sometimes having to get out, sometimes I jump in a car out of Docklands and it can take 20 minutes just to get out of the Docklands area onto the freeway.
Yep.
It is. Yeah, it's congestion quite all around.
Yep, no doubt about it. That's going to be the key decision maker. I think most of the political discussion has been around those major infrastructure projects. A lot of money's being spent though. $19 billion by the Liberals and up to $50 billion by Labor, but. And Labor off the back of that are going, you know, they're going to break a previous election promise where they were suggesting that they would not increase the net debt of the Victorian state. In fact, that's now going to blow up by about $30 billion. where the Liberal Party's plan is essentially to keep net debt at current levels or around current levels. So debt is not necessarily a bad thing if it's being invested in productive in productive assets that are going to generate a return.
Yeah,
and infrastructure tends to, you know, be one of those, you know, investments that generates a great return for the general economy.
Yep.
It's the part where you've got these transfer payments and political campaign, you know, distributions, and that's the part that really bugs me, where, you know, parties are supporting their constituents and, you know, giving them political favours for elections and support and the like.
Yep.
Call them donations, but they're in some ways bribes and payoffs, aren't they?
Yeah.
A lobster with a mobster, that kind of thing.
Exactly. So Labor have also made health, and I mean, Labor have stayed true to their roots. You know, they're targeting schools, they're targeting infrastructure, they're targeting healthcare. And this is why I think the Labor Party seemed to be really, you know, resonating with the voters at the moment, because I don't think anyone really knows what the Liberal Party stand for. I think there's been, and this is at the national level as well as the state level, the Liberal Party just seems to be in complete disarray at the moment. And whatever they say, no one's really treating them with any respect, because, you know, they themselves have been nothing but a basket case at both levels of Parliament for, you know, probably the best part of the last 7 years or so.
Yeah, you're right, Joel. They seem to have one person that gets focused on at the leadership level. In Victoria, it's Matthew Guy.
Yeah.
But not much else to
write
about, talk about. There's just not much that rises to the surface.
Mm.
I think it's the first time I'm going into an election where I'm voting on and not having a clear understanding of why I'm voting either way.
Yeah.
I'm not really seeing any standout reasons as to why I'm going to make a decision.
If I didn't have to vote, I wouldn't be voting in this election, because I don't have strong conviction about either party.
Not really.
Yeah.
I do have one strong conviction, and that's when it comes to the high-speed rail.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's the wrong type of rail to be investing in.
This is the regional rail.
This is the regional rail, because what they're going to do, they're planning on the 200-kilometre-hour track for the track, which is physically closer to Melbourne. Obviously, anyone travelling from a country area goes on the existing track until they get to a point, and then they go onto the 200-kilometre-an-hour track, and they get a half-hour quicker train ride the rest of the way to Melbourne.
Right.
That's the plan.
Is that the plan?
I hadn't really delved into it, that's right.
They'll speed it up between here and Geelong, and that will save half an hour of time. But then if you're beyond Geelong, well, then you're using the old track at the old speed until you get to Geelong, and then you save your half hour of time, which is nice in principle. But I think if we look ahead decades into the future, we don't want 200-kilometre-an-hour track covering the whole of Victoria. Mm. We want 300, 400, 500 kilometre-an-hour track.
We want a future-proof.
Yeah. Yeah,
correct.
Yeah.
We're eventually linking with Sydney and Canberra to have all of that covered.
Yeah, no, I agree with you there, Louis. I think a 200-kilometre track is underwhelming, actually, in some respects.
Yeah, when you know what's already out there in the world and what other countries are doing.
Yeah.
But is the reason that we're not sort of jumping on or getting to the cutting edge of this because we don't have the population in those areas that the other countries have, so we can't necessarily get the revenue from taxes and everything to justify the expenditure? I'm not sure.
Well, we've got this unfortunate attitude of population growth being negative.
Mm.
Yeah.
And that's come from past underinvestment.
Yeah.
Because population growth does cause problems of congestion, and Melbourne has a lot of congestion.
Yeah.
But it's only because of that underinvestment that it hasn't happened. So how do you get over that? Well, you invest a lot in the future growth.
Yeah.
But unfortunately, people are becoming a bit anti-growth in population right at the time that we should be investing to cater for that future growth. Because we're still going to grow. The question is, do we grow at 1% a year or 2% a year or 3% a year? what's it going
to
be?
Well, let's be honest. We could grow at whatever number we wanted to. There are so many people knocking down the door to come into this country.
Correct.
You know, we could grow at whatever pace we needed to in order to make these projects viable longer term.
Yep. So if this project, if a bigger rail, faster rail project was invested in, well, then that would allow us to grow faster because those populations could live in further away areas, which has a wonderful impact on our property prices, which raises more revenue for the government, which then pays for the project. It's just that you need that time to have that payoff period.
Yeah, and those regional towns that are, you know, relatively small in population by comparison to the majors, you know, they'll get a critical mass where suddenly, you know, all of the opportunities in those towns open up. A lot more jobs can come about because you've got a lot more people there to be serviced. So it's almost like, they feed themselves over time by getting that population growth.
And there are fast rail companies that are saying, we will build it. We will pay for it. Government doesn't need to pay anything.
Yeah.
They just need to work with us to get the approvals.
They'll be the private operators.
Yeah.
Yep.
But we will build this privately operated high-speed rail network using the maglev technology, the magnetic levitation technology, instead of this 200-kilometer-an-hour track to deliver a world-class high-speed rail network.
Yeah.
I don't see any issue with that. I mean, I'm assuming that's how it's done mostly overseas, is it's corporations use their own capital and, you know, they have the long-term ownership for the returns.
Yeah.
Or some type of public-private partnership.
Well, it's done through a value capture. Obviously, where they are building the high-speed rail, there's going to be an increase in property prices around where they put the station.
Mm.
So the private company will have an arrangement in place where they capture the increase in that land value.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
But they'll arrange, let's say it's currently a farm where they're going to put a station.
Yeah.
So they'll into an arrangement with the landowner there to get the uplift in value of the land.
Right,
and with the government to allow the zoning for residential
Correct.
Development.
Government needs to allow the zoning and the physical corridor of rail and all the regulation that goes with it.
Yeah.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. Well, hopefully they figure this out.
Hopefully they do. Mm.
One of the other key battlegrounds is obviously crime, and crime has been one that is probably most topical recently, given the issue that happened down in Bourke Street a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I'm not convinced that either party has really sort of nailed the issue with crime. I think, and this is just a personal opinion, but for a long, long time now, I think our bail laws have been horrendous. The number of people
Darren Hinch went into bat for that, didn't he?
Yeah,
when he was elected.
The number of people who, you know, are running around on bail and who recommit crimes while on bail, and some of them heinous crimes, is just ridiculous. But the problem is we don't have enough jails. We don't have enough, you know, of that basic, you know, infrastructure. So, you know, there is a proposal from, I believe it's Labor, that is going to build a couple more jails as part of their plan.
Well, I know the Liberals have used it in their campaigning as part of their marketing that, you know, they're saying Victoria's crime is out of control under Labor.
Yeah.
But I haven't heard what they're going to do to fix it if they were elected.
Yeah.
Just trying to campaign on sentiment more than anything else.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Crime is one of those things where the problem is and the solution is a lot more complex than could be easily discussed.
Mm.
So the politicians come out with a headline that will perhaps help win elections, but doesn't actually fix the problem.
Mm.
Whereas the experts will say, well, look, we've got these much more sophisticated techniques to try and catch criminals who have committed crimes, but also identify those at risk of committing a future crime. And that ties in with the terrorism thing as well.
Yep.
Yeah.
But that is becoming highly technical and data-driven,
like
internet searches and people who make certain phone calls or associate with certain known criminals and extending the networks that way. That's not a conversation that you can have in a short period of time as to where the state should be putting their money into more resources.
Mm.
So it just doesn't really get mentioned.
Mm.
And I know that this isn't a state issue. This is more of a federal issue. But I think we could do so much better with the way we open up our borders for those who are coming to Australia to live. You know, I think our immigration policy and our integration policy really lacks. So if you, now I'm not saying that we go as far as what perhaps Singapore did, but I know that Singapore, they have a melting pot of different cultures. They've got the Chinese Malay, they've got the Muslims, they've got the Christians and the Catholics. And Lee Kuan Yew basically enforced for certain quotas and ratios of all of these cultures to live under the one roof or live under in the one building, because he didn't want to create, you know, ghettos and didn't want to create these ethnic areas. He wanted these people to get along with one another and enforce them to have certain numbers of
so basically like a rule that certain suburbs must have.
Yes,
certain percentage
exactly to try and, you know, to try and, you know, like what you have over in Sydney, in Western Sydney, where you've got the very strong Muslim population, yep. And then and here in Australia, in Victoria, we had you know, in Footscray it was the Vietnamese population, yep. in the 70s and the 80s, and now we've got the Sudanese population that are out in Dandenong,
yeah.
And we've got Chinese population which is out around Box Hill and you know,
yep, Waverley.
Glen Waverley and these areas,
yep.
I think that what we probably need to do a little bit better is, and we're taking in refugees as well, mm. And that's fine and that's great, but I think that there's a way in which we could perhaps help these people who are coming to Australia to integrate better, to perhaps learn, go through some sort of education program in the first few years that they're here, where they can have better language skills and they can, you know, learn some, you know, actual trades and some other skills so they can start businesses and they can get jobs. And that's right. But I think our immigration policy really sort of lacks, because we bring them in, we say, here's some housing and good luck to you.
Yeah.
And no wonder we have, you know, some issues with these new cultures that come to, you know, come to Australia to set up, because they haven't really been shown the way to integrate and to become a productive member of our society.
Yeah. Yep. You don't employ a staff member with no training program.
Yeah. And say good luck and off you go.
When someone new comes into your workplace, there's an induction.
Yeah.
And then they get mentored and it takes...
And there are rules.
And there are rules.
Exactly.
Yep. Exactly. Yep.
That if you don't abide by, you're out.
Yep. Yeah.
Yep. So I think that, you know, there's a few things that, once again, it's that just that strategic thinking that often goes lacking. And instead what ends up happening is you get these, you know, battlegrounds in politics that try and demonize these populations rather than actually embracing them and making them productive.
Mm. Yep. Yep. Yep, absolutely. Well, on that note, we'll take a short break. We'll be back with you shortly after these messages.
Are you concerned about your finances? Maybe you're not sure if you'll have enough money to retire on. Or maybe you've received a redundancy, inheritance, or even a significant promotion, or perhaps a life-changing medical diagnosis. Regardless of your concern or financial position, United Global Capital's advisors are experts in the areas of strategic financial planning, taxation, superannuation and self-managed superannuation funds, risk management, estate planning, and investments. Don't let fate dictate your financial future. Take control today and contact United Global Capital for a no-cost, no-obligation financial strategy consultation. Simply call 03-8657 7640 or email info@ugc.net.au and book your appointment today.
And welcome back, listeners. Thanks for staying with us. I'll kick it over to Brett now for a bit more on the state election.
Yeah, look, so whilst we've been talking about it, there was another part to what both parties are sort of hoping to do with their election promises that have an impact on property. And the part that we haven't discussed is the supply. So Labor and Liberal are both aware that there's an undersupply and a shortage of affordable housing. But it appears that the Liberals are the only ones that are really putting it on the agenda with their election promise that they're going to fast-track the planning for the remaining 300,000-odd lots in Melbourne's growth areas.
Right.
So this is an important aspect as well, because currently planning is very slow and very costly, and that's driving up the pricing and the time it takes to get new housing on the market. So that's one area that I thought, you know, is worth considering as well, that Liberals are making a committed plan to have those 300,000-odd lots approved and being able to be built by 2020, whereas Labor, whilst they're aware of it, haven't really got a focus on that in any manner.
Yeah, right.
Interesting.
And what some of the, I was looking the other day at what some of the big property groups are saying about, you know, what the election might say. So the UDIA is saying that an Andrews government will review the better apartment design standards, which have only been in operation for 18 months. Now, a review, what does that really mean? I don't see any impact of that. Yeah. And then they're saying that the coalition, should they get in, would lower height controls in neighbourhood areas. Not really seeing that that's going to change a whole lot. All that means is that, you know, outside of the CBD, they're just going to review how high construction can go, but they'll change that according to main roads and side streets.
Yep.
So I'm not seeing any major impact there either. Obviously, the things that Joel touched on with the infrastructure, that was heavily sort of focused on by a couple of groups. One of the groups, PDS group, has said that they'd like to see a reversal of what they deemed the devastating planning policies introduced by Richard Wynne when they took over. Now, listeners may not be aware of it. What happened when Labor came in, and the Melbourne construction boom was really rife then, and we've been riding that wave in a lot of jobs around the CBD for construction.
Yeah, but seeing a ton of it at the moment.
Given there are a lot of permits being granted, especially under the Liberal government, when Matthew Guy was the planning minister, he was known to be fast-tracking approvals of significant developments around the Melbourne CBD.
Yep.
When Labor got in, they thought, no, we need to put a stop to this. And one of the reasons was they didn't like the look of a lot of small pencil-type towers in the city.
Right.
So they introduced, in effect, a plot ratio, which was, it wasn't a height control, but it became a height control.
Yep.
So it certainly meant however big your land is that you're trying to develop on, you can't build more than X amount based on your land value. So not putting a height limit, but saying, you know, it was a 24 to 1 plot ratio. So that means if you were to build, you know, boundary to boundary, you could only go up 24 levels. Now, obviously, you can't do that on a site. You have to set back and do other things which would give you extra height. But what it did mean was that a lot of property owners in the CBD that were buying property for development purposes in the future, under what was the current plan with the Liberals, were seeing the yield and the amount of buildable area they could you know, develop suddenly taken out.
Yeah,
so that meant that, you know, all the developers have sort of put a hold on any future plans for the CBD. And the likely knock-on effect of this is that a lot of the construction is likely to slow down in Melbourne over the next 2 years.
Right.
As existing projects wrap up.
Yeah.
There's not
new ones coming through because those developers aren't seeing the reason to do so, because they're not going to be able to get the yield. They're not going to get the height and the amount of sellable space.
Right.
Wow.
So it could lead to a slowdown in construction jobs, particularly around the CBD area.
Yeah.
So hopefully that can be taken up outside. But if it's not, well, maybe that needs to be reviewed.
Yeah.
Mm. Okay. Mm. And what markets do you think that will affect property-wise? Are you talking commercial buildings, residential buildings in the city?
Mainly residential.
Residential
in the
city.
Yeah, because a lot of the developers that were buying these sites and expecting to be able to go up high. Well, actually, residentials, but also hotels. So commercial to some degree, but not commercial in terms of office space.
Yep.
So there will always be a blend, as, you know, we're across the road from one of the biggest development sites in Melbourne at the moment that is, you know, that's got all sorts. It's got retail at the bottom, it's got office space, it's got a hotel, and then it's got residential.
Yeah.
So all of them are going to be impacted to some degree, but I would say it's mostly residential that was going to be planned for and a lot of these developers would be aiming to achieve.
Yeah, okay.
Mm.
Interesting.
Yes. So, yeah, they were just some other parts that I think if you're looking at what's, you know, likely to have an impact on property out of the election, I think the Liberals have a better plan for leasing more affordable lots and hopefully helping affordability by fastening the planning process and lowering the costs.
Yep.
You know, any developer that's developing, and we may go into something on this in another episode about development, but typically one of the biggest costs in a property development is the holding cost whilst you're waiting for your planning approval.
Mm.
Now, if that can be fast-tracked, obviously there's less costs associated, and the developers can therefore, you know, still make their margin while selling at lower rates.
Yeah, yeah, right. Absolutely. Mm. I mean, if you're hanging on to a $20 million block of land, and you have to wait 2 years for your planning approval.
Yep,
you're paying a loan for 2 years on a vacant block of land.
Yep,
while you're just waiting for the council and VCAT and all those processes.
Yeah,
yeah, it's ridiculous.
Yeah. And so the Liberals have actually sort of outlined a plan where they would start to look at council's approval process and actually start to crack down on them if they're not approving in a relevant time frame.
Mm. Yeah, right. Okay. Mm. Yeah, good stuff.
Yeah.
Right.
So that's probably about enough on the election, I think.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Well, there you go. Well, Joel, I think you had something on debt levels.
So I was just coming across a, and this is more just of a bit of a general conversation I think we can all have and sort of participate in. But I read in onthebull.com that there was an article there that suggests that debt consolidators and budget planning businesses are booming at the moment. So you've probably heard of companies like My Budget and
Those ones.
Yeah. And there's also some debt consolidation companies like Fox Symes.
Yes, I've heard of them.
That offer services to help people who are in debt troubles get out of debt troubles or manage their affairs and try and bring their finances under control. And maybe that's just a sign of the times that we have taken on a huge amount of debt as real estate prices have increased. And I thought I might just sort of explain what a debt cycle is, actually, and what a debt spiral actually is and how easily it can actually happen. Because, to be honest with you, I was on the verge of a debt spiral about 15 years ago when I was a young buck, spending more than what I was bringing in and living the good life and going through uni and buying cars and paying for fast women. And,
and here you are.
What's a debt spiral? I don't know if anyone's ever really sort of stopped to think about it. And how do you get yourself into a debt spiral? Well, basically, the experience that I had was that, I was frivolous. I was young. I was dumb and having too much of a good time while I was going through uni. And before you knew it, I had a personal loan on a car. And I had some credit card debt. I'd traveled, up and done some nice holidays away and all funded through credit and credit cards. And before you knew it, I was paying for debt repayments at a level that was making it very hard for me to meet my actual living costs.
Wow.
And what would tend to happen is that every month, my repayments were pushing me into a negative cash flow position, where every fortnight where I got paid, I was in a negative cash flow position. Now, it starts off very small. You're down $100 one week and then you're down, $150 the next week after that. And before you know it, 3 or 4 months down the track, you're down $200 a week. Mm. But you're never ever getting a chance to really make that catch up.
Yep.
And before you know it, you're actually now struggling to really rein that in. And because you've got these legal obligations to repay those debts and you can't really cut costs anymore because you've got a basic cost of living that you have to service, before you know it, you can find yourself in some fairly, significant issues.
Yeah, you sure can.
It can be very scary.
And long-term impact with credit ratings and everything now.
Absolutely. Mm. Absolutely. And, it just got me thinking about that. Having read that article, it got me thinking about how quickly it can happen because basically I think from memory, I was broken up with a girlfriend and went out there and spent, 12 months just partying it up, living the single life.
The George Best life, have you heard his saying?
Yeah, it was.
You haven't heard that?
It was a lot of fun.
George Best was an Irish soccer player.
Yeah.
And he had the quote, it was saying, "I spent a lot of money on booze, birds and fast cars. The rest I just squandered."
But, it happens very quickly, 6 months, 6 months in and I'm looking at this and I'm going, holy cow, how am I going to pull myself out of this? I had a bit of fortune and was able to, buckle down and had a little bit of an influx, winning a $10,000 raffle at the local footy club.
Oh, wow.
Really?
And before you know it, I was sort of back on my feet again. It can happen pretty quickly and it creeps up on you because you don't realize it's happening. You go, oh, okay, next week I'll tighten up the belt, but then you never do. Next week I'll tighten up the belt and then you never do. Yeah. And today, thank God, I've learnt those lessons and we don't have those issues today. And I'm using that personal experience to help train and educate our clients.
Mm. And you've got someone else holding you accountable.
Certainly do.
That's right.
There's no doubt about that. Certainly keeps me
this
in check.
This relates a lot to some of the things you've spoken about previously, Louis, and money habits.
It does, and absolutely. Mm. And it's a more common problem than people realise.
Mm. Yeah.
And it affects people of all different walks, which people don't realise. There's stories of people having relationship breakdowns, and then they need to rediscover their life and their purpose and themselves. But a lot of the time we do it through activities that are not necessarily positive, and spending outside of your means is not necessarily a positive habit. Yeah. And if it happens a little bit, well, then you can catch up. But if it's a significant relationship breakdown, you might be looking at 6 months where someone is in this mindset of deciding not to pay attention to the consequences of their decisions.
Yeah.
And that
it's
happens.
It's not the priority. Yeah. It's this other emotional thing that's taking your energy.
And it is very easy these days to spend money.
It's so
easy.
Because
you don't need to spend out of the cash in your pocket.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
When your bank account balance is zero, you can go to credit.
Yep.
And you can go to the maximum on your credit cards, and they will let you spend beyond your credit card limit.
And the ease in which credit was handed out, like credit cards, you could get credit cards easier than,
And then increased credit limits. Once you've got one, they keep sending you these automatic increases.
Yeah. Well, there's a bit more regulation around automatic increases now, but if you opt in, well, then you still get those offers. But when you're looking at buying furniture, you can buy it on interest free. When you want to buy an Apple computer or an iPhone, you can buy it on interest free.
Absolutely.
Or just get a 2-year phone contract.
That's right, and there's not even any.
I mean, an iPhone now costs like
nearly $2,000 for the latest model.
Bucks.
Yeah, really.
Yeah, the latest model, if you were to buy it outright, would be close to $2,000.
Yeah, and you're still paying that much. If you take a 2-year contract, you're still paying about that much over the life of the contract.
Yeah,
it's a computer that fits in your pocket, literally for about the same cost.
Yep.
Wow.
And it happens to all people. It happens to young people who start that habit as a student. It happens to people in the middle of their lives. It happens to blue collar. It happens to accountants. Mm. People you think are always going to be financially conservative, but all people are people.
Yep.
And we all have psychological habits, and we have experiences through relationships or business or loss of family or health challenges, which then trigger our spending to get out of whack.
Yeah.
And this is a really critical issue, Lou, because there's another part to this as well, that there was a study done a couple of years ago that said that one of the major reasons for relationship breakdowns is financial stress. In fact, they ranked it the number one reason
for
relationship breakdown. So it's almost like, well, hang on, I've had a relationship breakdown. Now I'm making financial decisions that are just crazy and putting myself into it. But sometimes the reason you've got the relationship breakdown is already because of financial stress.
Yeah. That's very difficult.
So such an important matter to make sure you get on top of.
I think, you know, just going through that experience myself, I think the line in the sand was actually taking ownership and saying, okay, I cannot continue to do this anymore.
Yep.
You know, I've got to take responsibility. I have to set up the basics and the fundamentals. And it was a process because, you know, I would go through periods where I was great, and I'd save, and then all of a sudden, you know, you go away on a holiday, and then you'd blow it all, and all of those good habits would go out the window, and then you'd have to rein it in again. And you know, for years, you know, I sort of, well, for a number of years, I, you know, struggled with, you know, trying to rein in my, you know, appetite to spend and have fun. You know, and then but over time, you do control it, and you know, if you work at it, you know, it's a habit. And you can have good habits and bad habits. And really, you know, they talk about being, you know, consciously competent.
Yep.
You know, the four stages of being. One, you're unconsciously incompetent.
Yep.
Yep.
Then you become consciously incompetent.
Yep.
Then
you know you're not good at it.
Yep.
Yeah, yeah.
And then you become consciously competent.
So you're good at it, but only when you pay attention.
Exactly. And then all of a sudden you break through into the next phase where you become unconsciously competent.
And you can put it on autopilot.
Exactly. And it just happens. But it's something you work at. It took me probably a good 4 or 5 years to really master that.
Yep. Yeah, absolutely. You got to work at it. And the other trick is to have structures in place so that when you slip up, you can only slip up to a certain extent.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yep. So mistakes will happen, and that's okay. We're all human. We'll make mistakes. So if a mistake is going to be made, how do you minimize the extent of that mistake?
And that's your early warning signal for, hey, I've got to pull things in. I've got to, you know, refocus.
That's right. So before we go to our next break, it's worth mentioning that there is a national debt helpline. You can find them at ndh.org.au.
Very good.
It's a government organisation. They're not a bankruptcy agency. It's a government organisation that will just help you talk through where you're at in your situation and what your options are.
And on that topic, Louis, is it true that I think a lot of the banks, if you, they do have a hardship sort of claims area or something, that if you've got a loan and you are going through a period, that you can certainly have your loan just put on pause or something in terms of repayments while
Absolutely.
You sort things out?
Yeah. Just about all banks are much more negotiable these days. Mm. They recognise that once someone is in hardship, there is a chance they might not get anything out of that person as far as repayments, and they don't want that to happen. Mm. They want to work with people so that that person can get back on their feet and can repay that debt in full one day, because having that debt repaid one day is a lot better for the bank than having it never repaid at all.
Yeah. Yeah, so if anyone's in a position where they're going through hardship, maybe you know, think about who their broker is or who their bank is, or speak to someone that might be able to help them manage that.
Absolutely.
It's one of the key things that we focus in on here is getting the fundamentals right. I mean, the stock investing and real estate investing, that's the sexy part, but we don't even talk about that conversation with the client until we know that they've got the fundamentals
Get their
right.
money management under control.
Correct. Exactly. Yep. Yep. All right, we'll skip to a break now. We'll be back shortly.
Want to learn the strategies that have achieved returns more than double the return of the average superannuation fund? Each day, clients of United Global Capital are using strategies and tactics that were once thought the domain of the professional investor or the super rich. Book your seat at UGC's Financial Fast Track Seminars, where you'll learn the science behind selecting high-performance stocks and real estate, how you can participate in advanced strategies like property development, short selling, and international investments, as well as how to protect your wealth against major adverse market events. To secure your seat, simply go to ugc.net.au/events and select the seminar that suits your needs. Seats are limited, so book your spot now.
Welcome back, listeners. Thanks for sticking with us. Next, I'm going to touch on the Royal Commission and talk about those arsehats at the major banks. They really are a bunch of, well, can I say crooks?
Yeah, I think you can.
Can I?
Yeah, I think you can. I mean, I think it's been revealed that, you know, it's not defamation if it's true.
Yeah.
And the Royal Commission has proven that it's true. So.
Definitely bring them scrutiny. Yeah.
But so, as crooks, though, are they going to be held to account? That's the unknown with this.
Yeah. Well, here's the thing. So my point overall is that there are companies in this world, organisations in this world, that want to provide good service and value to their customers. And they do that, and it works for everyone, and their customers pay a legitimate fee, and the company makes a profit. Mm. Profits are not evil. Profits are a good thing, and it means that everyone is getting something out of receiving services and goods and providing services and goods. But the problem is there are companies that are just looking to sell something and make a profit.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And that's where the problem is. So what we've got is an instance with Commonwealth Bank had an insurance product, a credit card protection insurance called Credit Card Plus Insurance.
Yep.
So they design this product and then they think, well, we've got this product. How do we sell it? Let's set up a marketing and sales team and let's start selling it. Well, it came out this week. There are 60,000 instances of this being missold.
Wow.
60,000 cases where credit card protection insurance was sold to unemployed people who would have been ineligible to claim on it.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
So
this is a CBA,
that's a rule.
Is it?
This is Commonwealth Bank.
Commonwealth Bank.
Yep.
So it was systemic.
Systemic.
Within that.
AUSTRAC.
Now,
financial planning.
Yeah.
Now, in financial planning, let's go back to the reason the banks got into wealth management and financial planning in the first place. They didn't do it to serve their customers. They did it because they started doing it in the early 2000s because in the 90s, compulsory superannuation came in, which forced 9% of people's wages to be contributed to super funds.
Yep.
And there was this pool of money which is continuously growing and continues to grow today. Is it the largest pension scheme in the world?
I think it's certainly been recognised as one of the best, if not the best.
Yep.
But yeah,
and
it's getting up there.
And it is one of the largest pools of wealth in the world, our superannuation system. And when that is being managed and invested, well, then those investment managers, they charge fees to deliver returns.
Yep.
But the banks didn't get into it to deliver returns.
No.
They got into it to make a profit.
Yep.
So they got into the wealth management space. And then they thought, well, if that's now automatically growing, Westpac bought BT, mm-hmm. Commonwealth Bank bought Colonial First State, NAB bought MLC, and ANZ.
Westpac had BT.
ANZ bought OnePath, which at the time was ING. So they all went down that path to get that space. And then they thought, well, how do we boost that even more? How do we get even more money than super contributions being driven into our funds management businesses? Financial planning.
Yep.
Financial planners mm-hmm. then have a job to reach sales targets to get investments into those funds.
Yeah, these guys weren't financial planners. These guys were sales teams that had done, you know, if they were lucky, 4 weeks in a diploma, and before you know it, they're advising people on some of the most important decisions in their life.
Yep.
No wonder we've got these issues.
Yep, exactly. So in the financial planning industry, it's been well known for a long time that your branch financial planner has a job to do of getting funds into their investments.
Yep.
It doesn't necessarily mean the person is a bad person. It doesn't necessarily mean that person is underqualified or unskilled, although that has commonly been the case.
Mm-hmm.
There's definitely some good eggs in that situation, but the system and the structure was never set up to serve customers.
No.
And we now finally this week, Westpac at the Royal Commission, they acknowledged that the words were, clearly the move into wealth management was not a success for customers. Finally, Westpac has come out with that admission. It's what we've known for a long time, but finally it's in the public eye.
Well, it wasn't done for the benefit of the customer or the client. It was done for the benefit of how can the bank sell more products to the same person by upselling and cross-selling.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And earlier this year...
And upselling and cross-selling their own products.
Correct.
You know, like these were products... This wasn't a service. This was Colonial First State manufactured products by Commonwealth Bank sold to Commonwealth Bank customers.
Yep.
It wasn't impartial advice. It wasn't independent advice. It was purely about how do we flog more CBA product.
Yep, that's right. And it came out earlier this year that those bank performing funds have not been the best performing super funds in Australia. In fact, they've been amongst the worst.
Yeah.
So it's just gets on my nerves a lot.
I actually think it's been great that this Royal Commission's come about to bring a lot of this to light, because insiders have known that there's an issue, but until this commission came about, we didn't have this information to really discuss.
Yeah. Exactly.
And there's someone, if they were in politics, I'd probably be more interested in. Is that Rowena Orr?
Yeah,
Rowena. She doesn't mind asking the hard-hitting questions.
She is a heavy hitter.
Yeah.
Rowena Orr for Prime Minister.
Yep. I think I'd back that.
Yeah. There you go. Or at least Financial Services Minister.
Yes.
Exactly.
He doesn't let anyone get away with it.
No, that's right. Good on her. So that's my two cents on what's been in the news for the last week.
Yeah.
Fantastic.
Okay.
All right. Well, moving on to our final segment, a change of tone.
You cannot be serious.
That one.
What else has been happening?
Well, I have an interesting article that has come out of Only in America and New Orleans. So as jokes go, according to the Huffington Post, this one was really crappy. You might even say it bombed. Well, according to the Huffington Post, a New Orleans man accused of threatening to blow up a local restaurant last Tuesday told police it's all a big misunderstanding and he was referring to a bowel movement. So according to an arrest warrant, the 30-year-old Arthur Posey walked into the Willie's Chicken Shack and asked an employee what time the restaurant closed. When the employee told Posey she didn't know, he allegedly replied with, "Y'all about to close right now because I'm going to get a bomb and blow this place up." Now, the restaurant employee told police that Posey was very angry during the discussion, but he later told police he was actually referring to the need to use the bathroom.
Wow. Poor choice of words.
Yeah.
Jeez.
Well, in a similar vein, Joel, you introduced us a while ago, and you probably don't recognize his name, Andrew Douglas McIntosh.
No.
Doesn't ring a bell, but it was someone you brought up in this segment a while ago. Oh. He was a 64-year-old Brisbane executive, also known as the Poo Jogger.
Oh, yes. Poo Jogger.
How's he doing?
Yeah, well, it's not so much about him, but I saw something the other day. I thought maybe he's got a long-lost brother because there was a man arrested in Melbourne just this week as the Naked Jogger.
Oh, my God.
Oh, what?
You didn't hear this, guys? So here it is. A Naked Jogger who's been running through the streets of Melbourne for the past several months has been arrested after he jogged past a police car.
Wow. So, oh, my goodness.
Jogging. Oh, what a sport.
Yeah. It's great. It's great.
It reminds me of a couple of parties I used to go to back in the day.
I think we better end this.
Oh, jeez. Now,
a couple of mates.
Now we all know, that scams are out there. Everyone's vigilant about scams on the email and fake phone calls from the ATO.
Oh, they've been rough.
But it's gone into the music entertainment industry. Nicki Minaj.
Yeah.
She flew all the way to China for a concert that turned out to be a scam.
You're joking.
Yeah. She was scammed.
She got scammed. The festival that she was booked to play at didn't exist.
You're kidding.
Yeah.
So crazy. What? So that's unbelievable.
Surely her management would do some due diligence.
I'm sure someone got fired for
that. I reckon. Yeah.
Well, that wraps it up for another week. Thanks for joining us, listeners. We'll be back again with more entertainment and serious business.
And maybe even Steph.
Yeah. Maybe even Steph. That would be nice. Yeah. Steph, come back.
Great.
Thanks,
work.
Guys.
Thanks.
Catch
a lot,
you soon.
Louis. Thanks, Brett.
You've been listening to this week's episode of The Investor Exchange. To access this episode's show notes, go to theinvestorexchange.com.au and follow us on Facebook at The Investor Exchange for updates on our latest episodes. This show is for entertainment and educational purposes only. Before making any investment decision, contact United Global Capital by emailing ugc.net.au for a personalized, no-cost, no-obligation financial strategy consultation. Or alternatively, email us at info@ugc.net.au.